If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another prediction show here on Fightful with me, Stephanie Chase. Today, I am predicting AEW Forbidden Door with Suit Williams. Hello, Suit. How are you?
Hello, hello.
You good?
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm just now realizing that my living room on video kind of looks like a sanitarium with the white couch and the white walls with nothing on them, but we just moved, so it's not done up yet, but not in the crazy house yet, despite some of my takes.
You're forgiven. Well, look, I'm in what I would call my teenage bedroom, and I have a like wild WWE 2000s cover on it, which I've had to switch around so it's just the logo because there's too many bad people on the front of it. And it's not even on by choice. It was like the only clean cover I had left. And I was like, okay. But now that I've switched it, it means like all the bad people are sleeping on top of me, which might actually be worse. But anyway, it's not good.
Better not to think about it.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Sue, this is the first time we've ever spoken, right? So thank you so much for taking on this endeavor with me of AEW Forbidden Door. How hyped are you for the show on Sunday, which is live from London in the UK?
Well, I do enjoy an afternoon pay-per-view. That's always good. You know, I enjoy it all in. I was there live. You know, I didn't think the show would be going, 6 hours, but and that's 6 hours from when I got there. I skipped 0 hour. So I kind of hope from home that this one isn't 6 hours. I don't think it can be because I think there's a curfew or whatever in the UK.
There's a 10:30 curfew at the venue, and the show starts at 6 p.m. I believe. And I believe that Tony Khan should only be allowed to book venues with curfews. Like, I've been to enough AEW shows to like just personally believe that. So I think we're getting a 4.5 hour pay-per-view plus the pre-show.
Yeah, that's acceptable. That's reasonable for an AEW show.
Yeah, it's digestible. And for me, watching it from Ireland, it's on at the best possible time because it's going to start at 6 p.m. So that's like dinner time. And
yes, it's a nice normal time for you, for the Europeans out there. We get, the Americans get it, early in the afternoon. It starts at like 11 or noonish central time. Yeah. So
you get to have your lunch. I get to have my dinner. It's good. It's good.
There you go. As far as the show as a whole goes, it reminds me of there was this What Culture Wrestling video from around WrestleMania time, and Michael Hamflett made a point about there being a lot of it'll be good on the day kind of feeling to it. Mm-hmm. And there's a good few things on this show where it's like, it'll be good on the day, but like the build up, like at a point was good, but then something kind of got weird, and then there's some other matches that are kind of just thrown on, which I don't mind personally for the Forbidden Door. I actually think that there's like, I don't want to say too many stories, but I do think there's that the need to like build everything up on the show as opposed to, making it like an all-star kind of one-off kind of show. has kind of hurt it a little bit from like the New Japan involvement from because they were running the G1, definitely from the Stardom involvement because the five-star Grand Prix is still going on right now. I think the final is the same day as Forbidden Door. So not having, you know, the need to have every match having a story going into it is kind of hurting the show a little bit. It's a help and a hindrance.
I feel like Forbidden Door never really has a good build, like probably due to the concept. And I feel like, I mean, I was at Forbidden Door last year, and although I enjoyed some of it, like certainly when I was watching Moxley and Naito, I called him Nitro, Naito, I was like, kill the concept now. Like, like we're in the ground, like it's dead. And I do feel like, I remember like before Forbidden Door ever existed, the kind of thoughts people were having of what it would be. I remember doing a stream with like Andrew Thompson and SP3 and Benno where we all did our like dream cards. And the way Forbidden Door is, at that point, we didn't know Tony Khan well enough to know that he has to make everything an annual event, like no matter what. So, you know, at that point, we were thinking it would be this like these great like one-off matches that you could get. And then I think it never really like panned out that way. And I'm not sure like New Japan really have the people now to give like dream matches to. And it's funny looking at, you know, people like Okada being like he's on the AEW side now, which is, but yeah, I don't think Forbidden Door ever has like that great a build, but it definitely is, it will be all right on the night like type show. And I'm sure it will be a good show. But we have 9 matches to get into, and we're going to get into those now and give our predictions. We want to hear your predictions too. And first, let's hear a word from MyBookie.
Hey guys, Sean Rossap here to tell you about MyBookie.ag. Yes, you can bet on professional wrestling. I know a lot of people watching this know that they have some insight. They've got a little bit of a heads up. And if you think that you know more than the odds makers, head over to mybookie.ag. Use that code FIGHTFUL. Get a $50 bonus with a $100 deposit or a $100 bonus with a $200 deposit. They have lines on upcoming shows for WWE, AEW, as well as all other sports. But leave with a little bit of extra if you feel very confident in the direction of some of the booking, the direction of some of the storylines. You can bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with mybookie.ag. Use that code FIGHTFUL. Please only bet what you can, and please bet responsibly. MyBookie.ag bringing you the best experience from the best. MyBookie.ag and the code FIGHTFUL.
MyBookie.ag and the code FIGHTFUL. Sid, are you ready to get into it?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Open the Forbidden Door with a very unforbidden door match. We are going to open with Adam Copeland and Christian Cage versus the Matriarchy, Kip Sabian, and the returning Killswitch / Luchasaurus. Oh my gosh. Where to start on this one? Yeah. I think I'm an edge hitter, just like flat out. I think everyone knows that have watched any shows where I've had to talk about Edge. So I'm not into this one at all. But yeah, I'm an edge hater. I don't even like have any, like, I don't want to see him and Christian reunite just because I don't like anything that encourages him. And I think this is just, you know, encouraging him to continue on. That match with Stokely where he was talking like to a woman in the audience and stuff. It was so bad. And then Kip Sabian, no offense, Kip Sabian having a pay-per-view match, even if it is in England, is wild to me. Nice to see Luchasaurus back, of course, but I'm just going to say, I think, yeah, Adam and Christian are going to win. I'm sure they'll have a big night in Toronto at All Out, but for me, this is not one that I'm looking forward to. How do you feel about it, Sue?
Yeah, the Cope and Christian thing is not something that I've particularly been looking forward to as much as I've just like been, all right, they're doing it, I just hope it's good. But yeah, I will say that I do like how they're kind of going about it with Christian not suddenly like abandoning his character. He's just being like, you know, mm-hmm. I don't need to change, but I do need help. So let's help mm-hmm. each other out and move on from there. I do like that aspect of it. It's good to see Luchasaurus back, like you said. You know, he had a very scary sounding, you know, ailment. I think it was double pneumonia, I believe it was. Shame about Nick Wayne getting hurt, but I do think that can kind of turn into a positive because I do think Cope and Christian are going to end up with the tag titles. So maybe you could run this back with Nick Wayne on the other side. You know, on the other side of this injury. I do wish there was a lot less Kip Sabian in this match. I was live at All Out, and I saw maybe the only boring Pac match there's ever been. I saw Pac versus Kip Sabian for the All-Atlantic title, I believe it was called then. Mm-hmm. And it was not good.
So, Kip is one of those guys where it's like he had a wild stroke of luck getting in with Cody when he got in. And I guess he's just here now.
Yeah. He's like the, you know, to be American about it, he's like the backup quarterback that everybody likes, but everybody knows just isn't good.
Yeah.
So he's just like, you know, he's a good locker room guy. And it's like, all right, I guess, but that don't mean put him on pay-per-view. But
I was listening. You mentioned him earlier. I was listening to Michael Hamflett and What Culture earlier. And they talked about this, you know, resurrection of Killswitch video, Luchasaurus video. And they were like, what if Jack Perry comes back in London, which was the scene of a big crime for him. And that did make me wonder, like, you know, where is Jack Perry? When is he coming back? Kind of nostalgic for his team up with Luchasaurus. I think I'd be definitely more invested if it was him rather than Kip. But yeah, I don't know if that's something that could happen, but that would at least be more intriguing to me if he made a return than the Edge and Christian stuff. But like, yeah, I'm glad I won't have to be in that arena where everyone is singing Edge's song and encouraging him.
Yeah, my thought was that Jurassic Express, because I figured they put Perry back with Luchasaurus, it'd be kind of like a nice reset for him.
Yeah,
my thought was that they would be put together, and then once this Cope and Christian thing got rolling, I thought, okay, maybe those two come back and it's like a ghost from Christian's past and they get the belts onto them and kind of just move off this Cope and Christian thing, you know, a nice little jump off point for that. But you know, Luchasaurus is back now, so we'll see how. We'll see what happens with Perry, but I'm still, look, I will die with my Jack Perry stocks in hand. There is a baby face run with that guy. You know, trim the beard a little bit, go back to the trunks, get the women screaming. Hey, I see it. I've got the vision.
Like, I always support Jack Perry. He's, other than Jay White, my mom's favorite in AEW. He does get the ladies' vote. He just ended up in a really bizarre situation, which he had to turn heel from. But there's definitely more babyface potential to be mined from Jack Perry. But yeah, I think we're both in agreement. It's going to be Cope and Cage winning to set them up to do something big in Toronto. And I guess that will be fun. I saw them wrestle each other in Toronto when AEW did a Dynamite in Toronto. And that was the best use of Edge for me, so at least they'll get that. All right, I'm going to switch up the order a little bit because it's too soon to talk about the next one that is on the Wikipedia list. So let's talk about Kyle Fletcher versus Hiromu Takahashi for the TNT Championship. Suit, how do you feel about this one?
This is a very interesting match. It's a very Forbidden Door feeling match. Mm-hmm. It might be the most interesting Hiromu match on paper since before the pandemic, really. I mean, he's been spinning his wheels a lot. He did get like one, he had one never title match with Hanare, which was like one of my matches of the year for whatever year that was. But other than that, he's just been really spinning his wheels in New Japan. So, you know, getting to see him in with, you know, a new face, a heavyweight, you know, that's always a very interesting aspect for me. And then Kyle Fletcher, like, I'm very glad AEW got him locked up because he is going to be, he's on track of being one of the best wrestlers in the world, if he isn't already. Like, he's phenomenal.
He's just had such an incredible transformation from, like, we've seen him on the indies, even working with him in Rev Pro, and he's like such a different guy now. I've always have a spot in my heart for Hiromu and Daryl. Daryl is a big part of my life, so I'll always love Hiromu, but I do think that he's become like very stale. It is not the pre-pandemic Hiromu, but I think that, yeah, putting him in a different environment might just breathe new life into him. I think he might be more like unleashed or like unchained in this match, and Kyle is going to give it his all too. So I think it's going to be really good and really interesting. I hope they keep it to around like the 10-minute mark. I think that's like the best. Sometimes AEW can go like a little bit over with the match lengths, but this one I would say keep it to about 10 minutes. But I think we can both agree that like Kyle is going to win this match, and that's going to be it. But it's going to be very good, I think.
Absolutely. I think this is going to be, I think this TNT title run is going to be a big showcase for Fletcher as he rises up the card. And there's a world where I see him beating Hangman for this world title.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe not, maybe toward the start of next year more than anything, but I can see it in my mind. Like, he is on that trajectory, and I'd be looking forward to it.
Part of me would say that's too soon, but he's like, it's been fast. Like, the trajectory he's been on, it has come up like fast thanks to him. So you never know.
He hasn't been a heel for a year yet. Mm-hmm. Like, his turn was at Wrestle Dream last year, and we haven't come up to Wrestle Dream this year yet. Like, it's only been 10 months, and he is just,
it's crazy.
Shot off like a rocket ship.
Up next, we have another more Forbidden Door match. We have Zack Sabre Jr. versus Nigel McGuinness, who will have Daniel Garcia with him. And this is for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. I think this is very cool. I remember when Nigel returned last year at All In at Wembley. I remember how excited Benno was when they started playing Oasis Fucking in the Bushes, and he knew it was Nigel. And Zach is one of my absolute favorite wrestlers to watch, and he had my favorite Forbidden Door match last year, and so I always love watching him. And these two feel like two, you know, different generations of the same kind of guy, which is really cool. This does have a kind of a dream match element, certainly like something you maybe never thought was going to happen with the situation with Nigel. So I think that's awesome. And then as far as Daniel Garcia has been palling with Nigel. I guess he turns on him because Zach is of course going to win. And Daniel Garcia just in general is like a totally sore subject for me. So, you know, sad that he's just in that position. But anyway, I do think it's going to be very cool to see Nigel with Zach. But obvious winner. How are you feeling by this one, Sue?
Yeah, this is a very cool match to see. I remember seeing Desmond Wolfe in TNA. Like, I hadn't gotten into ROH yet, so I didn't know who the guy was. And I thought he was kind of cool, and then he disappeared. And then, you know, you watch that documentary of Nigel, and you see, like, just the anger and the pain that he dealt with his career ending the way it did. You know, I'm always going to be rooting for that guy to get, you know, the shots and the opportunities to, you know, finish his career on his terms. And he's looked very good as well. Like, did you watch the technical spectacle, as they called it, on Collision a couple weeks ago?
No, I did not.
That match is phenomenal. It's like a spot fest, but with technical, with like arm ringers and stuff. Like, it's a very, it's a match you would see on like an Evolve, like, undercard. And you think, oh, that was cool. And it's cooler because they put it on TV and it's like four of the best technical guys in the world. Nigel's been very good in his return. He's looked good. The Danielson match was really good. I like that FTR match he had with I like the FTR match he had with Garcia. The result isn't in doubt. Zach's winning, but it'll be really cool for London to get this match. Tony's paying for Oasis again. You know, it's a top five gate in company history. He's going to just burn it on Oasis. But I'm very glad to see that they've got Garcia, that they're going to turn Garcia here. Because if, you know, the post-match of the technical spectacle was, you know, Nigel not meaning to be, but being very condescending to Garcia. Mm-hmm. So it is going to be, you know, the focus is going to be on Daniel Garcia out of this. And I tweeted about it a little while ago where, you know, there's a world where AEW used that TNT title run to establish Garcia as like a top technical wrestler in the world. And then there's a world where he's in the spot against Zach instead of Nigel. But I do like that they have like, because he got lost in the shuffle, but I like that they're still going to focus on him and that coming out of this, presumably he's going to be a heel and he's going to get a run there. I think it's his role of best use. And I think it's going to be something where we get reminded how really good Daniel Garcia is. I have his stocks and I have Jack Perry's stocks. I'll be a rich man one day.
I feel like, so I had a load of Daniel Garcia stocks. Like, I think my whole portfolio was Daniel Garcia stocks. And like, and anyone that used to like listen to any of my Dynamite reviews, like every week I would talk about Daniel Garcia, like in depth. I made videos of Daniel Garcia, about Daniel Garcia, and all sorts. And I was so thought, like, I think in another universe, he could be what Kyle Fletcher is now.
I can see that.
And to me, in that universe, he would have had to never get involved with the Jericho stuff and continue on like Red Death Daniel Garcia. So I just feel like it's not that I don't have faith in Daniel Garcia, the person. I can't have faith in AEW and Daniel Garcia, just because like when it felt like he was going to leave, when there was that time, I was on the side of like he should leave just because of, you know, everything that had gone on, and just because I thought he was being booked so badly. I hated the dancing thing. I know like that, you know, helped get him over, but I thought it went on too long. I hated him still being stuck with Daddy Magic. I was just didn't like all that stuff. And I just thought, you know, if I was him or advising him, I would say just try it out in NXT. And that's not to say that I think NXT would be like a great, you know, place. Like we're seeing how Ricky Starks is doing in NXT. We're seeing how Mariah May is doing in NXT. So it is definitely not somewhere where you can say like, oh, they absolutely would be booked better in NXT. But I would have just thought like, you're so young, you know, cut
any thoughts
losses
on Daniel Garcia, Blake? No. Oh, good. All right. There you go. I had to get my sister off the bus real quick. So
give me one second
and I will be right back.
Life tip, don't get invested in any young wrestlers because you will end up being disappointed. And then he re-signed, and like I feel like people got in his head and was just like re-signed. So he did that, and then we had the whole MJF stuff, which was befuddling, just because of how it played out. And then he got the TNT championship, and I've just still never seen the kind of rise of Daniel Garcia that I wanted. I just monologued all my problem, like monologued Daniel Garcia's like entire career, and just how I just still feel like let down by the booking of Daniel Garcia. That's the gist of it.
When you got started talking about Garcia and I saw the bus pull up, I was like, okay, she can run with this.
Yes, I can run with this. So my days of talking constantly about Danny and making videos about him are over. And that is just down to the fact that there's kind of like nothing to say really, because I don't really think there was any great change when he, you know, decided to stay with AEW. But maybe it's coming here. Maybe he turns on Nigel, and this is a whole, like, this is the beginning of Daniel Garcia being the guy. But we will see. But yes, we both know that Zach is going to win this one, of course. But I do think it will be extremely, extremely good, especially if you like a certain type of wrestler. Shall we do a women's match suit?
Sure. We've got two of them.
We do. Let's do Mercedes Moné, who just won a championship tonight in RevPro, a Scottish championship. So she's collecting them all. Versus Alex Windsor versus Persephone. I don't think I ever say that right.
Persephone.
Sorry.
It's all good.
Versus Bozilla. You can tell that out of these four, there's only two that I'm really familiar with, Mercedes Moné versus Alex Windsor, but I guess we'll make it a four-way, so it's more Forbidden Dory. Suit, do you have any maybe better analysis than I probably do of this one?
I saw Persephone live at Supercard of Honor during All In Weekend, and I thought she looked good. And then Bozilla I watched on the five-star Grand Prix show that was on YouTube a couple days ago. It might still be on there. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I saw her. She was in the opener. And I thought her match was very good. You know, Bozilla, you can picture her in your head. She's a very mm-hmm. big woman. So her throwing everybody around will be good. I think Windsor's been very good in her AEW run so far. Yes. I enjoy her Pokemon-esque saying of her name. And, you know, Mercedes Moné is Mercedes Moné. She's great. And so she's going to retain here. We will move forward. And, yeah, we will have a good match on the books here.
Yeah, I think, obviously, Mercedes wins. I think it's nice to give Alex Windsor a match on the show. Like, she's new to AEW, but will be familiar to everyone in the UK. So that's really cool. So, yeah, I think it's going to be good. I'll just point out this comment from Ash. It would be really cool if Danielson was the commentator for the Nigel match. I think that would be really, really awesome. He'd be the guy to do it. Yeah,
he is over there. He's doing the pre-show.
Yeah. And Scott, I was saying that Mercedes did win another one. She's 9 belts Moné now. Wow. So
let's get her another one. Double digits.
I know. I think the TBS one will probably be the last one she loses. So I don't see that coming anytime soon. But let's go on to the other women's match. We have Timeless Toni Storm versus Athena for the Women's World Championship. This is Athena cashing in the casino gauntlet that she won. So Athena, finally, Athena is on the stage in AEW, which I'm really happy about. She's such an incredible wrestler. I don't 100% think like that her character that she does is like 100% for me, but I think she's the best in the ring, and I think that she was unfairly imprisoned for such a long time in Ring of Honor. It's just whoa. Predicting this one, I do feel, is kind of hard because Toni Storm is Toni Storm and like one of the biggest stars they have, not just women, but you know, she lost in Wembley last year to Mariah May. And the Athena, just story of Athena in, you know, Tony Khan's universe has been like such a long, drawn out one. And everything she accomplished from Ring of Honor, I could actually see her winning, but I don't know if I want to like place that bet yet. But how do you feel, Sue?
I feel very much the same way. You know, Athena's very much like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption. She's crawled her way through the shit, and she's finally made it to AEW. There was a little point where I think that, you know, she felt a little rudderless because she kind of ran out of people to fight.
Yeah.
But, they brought her up. They had her win the gauntlet. I think the more interesting thing to do would be to have her win.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you got Toni Storm. She's on the run of her career. She has been, you know, I've been someone who was critical of the character,
yeah,
and critical of the work early. But 2025, she has been phenomenal this year. And do you want to? I don't know if it would be cutting that off to have her lose here. Mm-hmm. It would be a little bit of a risk because she does feel like one of the biggest stars in the company, point blank period right now. So do you give her another mountain to climb or do you keep her on top? And if I had to put money on it, like you said, I would put money on Toni Storm over on BetAG. What's the sponsor? BetOnline AG?
My bookie.
My bookie. Them too. Never mind what I said.
I just feel like, and I'm going to say it because I always say it, Toni can, terrible booker of women, like just outright. So my feeling is if Athena loses, what becomes of Athena? Because he's not good at having like multiple women in the mix at the same time, multiple women's storylines. You know, it's one woman's match on Dynamite. That's it. And he's already like, I'm not saying that he was like actually like punishing Athena for the Ring of Honor run, because obviously like she became like the longest running champion of all time. She got like this huge.
She's the face of ROH at this point.
Yeah. So it's not like a punishment, but it is kind of a like was a weird move to keep her down there so long, especially when like Ring of Honor men were featured. Like we were having matches for Ring of Honor men's titles on Dynamite, but Athena was like this like secret or something. So if Athena loses, like I just don't have faith on her having somewhere to go after that. Like Bill says in the comments, who does Toni fight after? And that is a problem as well with the way that Toni Khan books, that he doesn't like have so many like women's storylines going on where you could see an obvious like next person. So I think I'd be very worried for Athena if she loses, but I do think Athena's going to lose. If I had to pick someone, I would pick Toni.
Yeah, I would disagree a little bit about the women's book, and he's done a lot of work this year to kind of, you know, get more people integrated. Like on Collision, there's like, it feels like they're building like a big women's tag match, maybe a women's blood and guts with, you know, the baby faces versus Tekla and her crew and Megan Bain as well. So there feels like there's a lot of stuff like percolating in the women's division. It just hasn't really like come to its conclusion yet. I do want to see where that ends up as far as like who Toni would fight after this if he were to win. That's part of why I think Athena's got a fighting chance.
Yeah,
you know, you've got Willow there, you've got Statlander there. Those are obviously, you know, money matches whenever you want to run those. Tekla, I feel like they really like because they gave her a stable and they're giving them a real like shine right now. So, you know, I'll say the name Jamie Hayter because I've been pushing for that match ever since she came back and then got hurt again. You know, prayer circle for Jamie Hayter.
Yeah, I wonder how close she is to returning, because obviously they're in her home country, but probably not close.
I mean, we don't know what she hurt. At least I don't know. So, you know, let's hope she gets back in the mix. But you know, Athena, you are right to be worried about it, because, like, what does she do after this? You know, you got the, ooh, you know what? She's defending her title on the Ring of Honor show coming up against Mina Shirakawa. And Mina's tight with Toni as well. So maybe Athena wins here, and then the Mina thing kind of gets them to a Toni rematch at some point. Maybe All Out. There's a shot. Athena's got a shot. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'm glad she's got at least a shot. I think it will be a very good match.
Oh,
and next up, we got Okada versus Swerve Strickland for the AEW Unified Championship. How do you feel about this one, Sud?
Boy, they kind of just threw this one on. Like the build has just been like, hey, Okada and Swerve, there you go.
Yeah.
Like there was that weird promo with Renee where it was like, Okada said like, oh, you hurt your knee. And then they kind of just shoved each other. And now it's like, that was pretty much it. Like, this doesn't require that much build, but it also just like, it feels like they would have been better kind of just like throwing the graphic up and like not having them on TV the last few weeks. So
this feels like Tony thought if Okada was still in New Japan, this would be a great idea. You know, like if Okada still worked in New Japan and Swerve is obviously Swerve to all of us AEW fans, then you could throw up that graphic and people would go, oh. But because they both work for the same company, it's like, oh.
And Okada's been like, you know, 60% Okada for all but like three of his matches. So hopefully, you know, it's a big house. You know, maybe we get Bright Lights Okada. You know, maybe we get it up to 80% today. But I wouldn't have Okada lose until the finals of the C2. Like, I think Swerve is a good name for him to beat. If Swerve wants to take some time off to get this knee problem dealt with that he's been dealing with for years, like now's a pretty good time. So
I think Okada's gonna win. I think Swerve probably wants some time off. Don't think it's gonna be very good. It's like my other prediction. Like I Okada in AEW, you know, is a whole big conversation, but he's just not the man he was. Swerve, I think, is amazing and is in my like top three favorite current wrestlers. But there's just something about the chemistry with Okada that I just don't think is going to be there. And then, you know, he's got the bad knee and everything, and the build hasn't been great. So this has no chance of being match of the night or anything like this. It has a chance of probably being one of the matches that, when it's all over and we have to talk about was it too long or not, this might be one of the matches that people say, oh, you could have cut that. It feels like that.
For me, I just have such a trust in Swerve in big spots. Like Swerve for me is one of the best big match wrestlers like in the world. I believe he can get like that level out of Okada. Like Speedball kind of got that level out of Okada at Double or Nothing. Like I think he can get Okada to like wake up and just remember he's Okada.
Maybe Prince Nana can throw some coffee on Okada and he'll wake up and remember he's Okada. All right, let's move on to the AEW World Championship match. Let's talk about weird builds. We've got Hangman Adam Page, our champion, versus MJF. This one, I thought, so MJF won the gauntlet, and then 2 weeks ago, Hangman like coaxed him into, you know, just declaring this title shot, and like that all seemed really good. They're back and forth, and then this week's Dynamite, it seems like they tore it all up and shit on it and flushed it down the toilet. And we had Mark Briscoe nearly dying at the hands of MJF and like that absolute foolery. So Hangman agreeing that this isn't MJF's gauntlet shot, right?
So he's just giving him the shot as opposed to MJF giving him the taking shot it.
Without it. I just like, I hate stuff like that. I honestly, if this happened to me in real life where someone like put petrol over one of my friends and said they were going to set fire to them, I would be like, you go for it. Like, just go for it and like see what happens to you, especially if you're doing it like broadcast on TV. Like, let's just see. Those things are like so stupid, especially when later in the show you see like security getting involved in like way less dangerous stuff. I don't know. I'm not going to bully him like MJF for this segment, because obviously Hangman's been involved in some wild stuff with Swerve that all worked out all right. But I do think, you know, MJF needs an editor, and I'm never sure that that editor is Tony Khan. So when I see something like this play out, I'm just like, oh my God, Max, please put the amateur theater to bed, you know? So that, I think that that really like sucks that they changed that. But yeah. I believe that Hangman is winning, and MJF, you know, I guess it's set out there that he's going to have a second match. So it's kind of all I got to say about that. How are you feeling about it?
I think the top two matches on this show, I think they changed them because of WWE running head on the same day next month. I think they want to have two big matches for next month where it's All Out versus WrestlePalooza, where it's All Out versus Lesnar versus Cena. So I think they were going to burn this contract off here, but then that kind of changed their mind. They basically set up Darby versus Moxley on this show, and then that changed. We'll get to that later, but I'm just anti Money in the Bank, executing contracts, all of it. I just think it's a burned out trope. It's been done to death.
Yeah,
it's unnecessary.
It makes you think that Athena should have abducted someone that Tony Storm has a connection to, and then have
her. He's got Mina and Alice and Windsor. But I will say, AEW has, this is a promotion where people have been set on fire. Jack Perry got set on fire in Anarchy in the Arena, and then he got the pin. So it's like, I guess it's plausible in this world that Mark Briscoe would have been fine.
I'm telling you, I would have taken that risk. I would have taken that risk.
But yeah, I thought the whole story of MJF trying to bait Hangman, but Hangman being evolved and changed and baiting MJF back, I thought that was a really good story.
Yeah.
The segment on this week on the Glasgow Dynamite, I thought was just, I thought MJF just wasn't in the building. That's how weird it was. Like, there is a version of that angle that I think accomplishes what they want to accomplish. Now it's got to be done in front of the crowd, and they're like beating up security, beating up the conglomeration, and then there's like, you know, a standoff like in front of the people, where I think it would have worked that way, but the way they did it with just this cold pre-tape is just like sucked a lot of juice out of this. So yeah, I think Hangman's gonna win. I think we're gonna get a rematch next month to counter the WrestlePalooza on this streaming service that no one knows how much it is and no one knows how they get. And I'm saying that as an American who follows sports media, I don't know how to watch this damn thing, but that's a whole nother, you know, bag of socks or whatever.
You know, and I don't have a problem with them continuing it with MJF and Hangman, because I've always described Hangman as my main character, like my hero of AEW. And I think if I would put someone in the villain of AEW role, it's MJF, you know, complimentary, because he's been there from day one as the antagonist of the company. Though I do think that, you know, Swerve is Hangman's kind of like life partner, whether like together or against. But so I don't mind this continuing at all. Do you have any thoughts on, just because some people mentioned in the comments, like MJF hurt business, is that done, or could that factor into any match on the show?
Now, I had a thought in my head before Dynamite of maybe this MJF hurt syndicate thing is a swerve, because he didn't really do anything to get kicked out of the group. So maybe it's MJF and MVP putting their heads together, getting one step ahead on Hangman.
Yeah.
But you know, they basically had Ricochet and his crew replace them in that segment on Dynamite. So that's like, oh no, I guess that's done. So
it's an interesting one. And MJF and and MVP are two people I can absolutely see like working the sheets on stuff, you know, putting out you know, false stories for the Swerve. So it is interesting whatever is going on there, but I do think it's done. Like
I think so too.
Okay, I'm just making sure that I have done everything and that we are on the final match. Yes.
No, we didn't talk about the tag title match.
Oh, the tag title match? Oh shit, yeah, yes. We are on the Hurt Syndicate now. Sorry, that's why I got confused, because I was literally looking at Bobby Lashley's name and thought, okay. So we got the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin versus Brody Kidd and Bandido versus FTR, a three-way tag team elimination match for the championship. So I guess this is one of these ones where the intrigue is what people might think is going on in real life here with the Hurt Syndicate, not wanting to lose, with FTR, you know, being the ones they don't want to lose to. And then we have the like addition of Brodito, so that doesn't make things look good. So this is this feels like it's either straightforward, like Hurt Syndicate win again, or FTR win, but I think the Hurt Syndicate's winning. I'm not sure.
It being an elimination match is what throws a wrench in everything. Yeah, because if it was a three-way match and Hurt Syndicate wanted to get out of losing, then you just, you know, pin Brody or something. But this being elimination, I think if I'm gonna give the Hurt Syndicate the benefit of the doubt, maybe they want to put over a babyface team while still getting to the FTR, you know, while still getting to the destination of FTR winning the belts, because they've been, you know, dominant heels this whole time. Maybe they don't want to lose that comeuppance coming from another heel team. Maybe they want to get it onto a different, you know, maybe they want to lose to baby faces and then, you know, somehow FTR end up getting the belts then. That's giving them the benefit of the doubt. That's giving them some grace. This match being elimination, I can see Brody pinning Shelton and then FTR getting their win back, you know, getting their win at the end of it all. So, you know, it will be interesting to see. I don't think the result is in doubt at all. I think FTR is going to win. You know, maybe the Hurt Syndicate just gets disqualified and they don't drop a fall to anybody, which that would certainly confirm some things. But
I do think for sure, you know, like Scott says, FTR versus Edge and Christian in Toronto, I think definitely. But I don't think you necessarily need the belts to do that, you know, like because it's Edge and Christian. I think if it's just going to be a funny result either way, because if Hurt Syndicate lose, they are it's going to be like, oh, you see, they'll lose. And then if they win, it will be another big conversation about like the Hurt Syndicate not putting anyone over or stuff like that. It's a hard
position. And then it's how they lose too.
Yeah.
Would be the thing to look out for there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they, you know, don't want to lose, like you just think of what Aleister Black was like in AEW. And it's like, if this fool can get away with these things, then, you know, it's okay for the Hurt Syndicate to get away with things.
Yeah, I mean, at least the Hurt Syndicate have a chant. But
Yeah.
It's a fun chant, too.
All right, let's go on to the Lights Out Steel Cage match, where we have Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, Darby Allin, Tanahashi, and Will Ospreay versus Claudio Castagnoli, John Moxley, the Young Bucks, and Gabe Kidd. All these injured men getting in a steel cage. I think this is going to be a absolute spectacle of crazy spots, not much wrestling. Will, you know, doesn't seem in good shape at all. we know that Tanahashi is just being held together. Obviously, everything Kenny's been through. Darby's just a maniac, so he'll do wild things anyway. Gib Kidd had time off too. So it's an interesting one to put together, but I just think this is going to be absolute carnage and the faces go over.
This, I just... When they announced this was going to be Tanahashi's last match in the UK, I don't know. Like, you could have given someone a million tries. They wouldn't have put this together. Jesus Christ.
It's so wild. Like, especially as someone, well, I guess maybe we both have the same perspective because he's Japanese. So when he comes over to the UK or the US, like even like before AEW, he just has this kind of like great, like living legend, like babyface aura where everything seems very just not crazy about him. Like before he got proper, like with the knees and all, it's like Tanahashi is going to give you a great match and it's going to be some proper wrestling, respectful wrestling. And yes, now his last match in the UK is going to be this absolute clusterfuck. It's wild.
It is. And I feel like Tanahashi's going to do a high fly flow off of something high, whether it be off the ropes, whether it be off the cage. I feel like there's just going to be nine guys stood under Tanahashi. He will do a big jump, and then him and Gabe Kidd will lay in the corner for 5 minutes. Because Gabe Kidd's coming off a something with his knee, too. He missed the whole G1. You know, I think...
Wild to miss the G1 and then still do this match.
But I do think it's easier to hide in this match than it would be to, you know, do 8 singles matches or, you know, however many would be if you were in the playoffs. So,
yeah,
from that perspective, I think this would be a lot easier for him because there's, you know, really 9, but like technically 8 because Tanahashi's not going to do anything. I still remember when Okada was in Blood and Guts, and yes. I was really wondering, like, what's Kazuchika Okada going to look like in War Games? And then after I watched the match going, I wonder what Kazuchika Okada would look like in War Games.
When Kota did Blood and Guts, that was a low point.
I remember like him doing like a moonsault on a bed of nails, though. Like he did something in that match. Okada didn't do anything.
He just seemed though like so out of place. And I know Kota's history. He's done wild shit in DDT, but there was something about him in like the AEW like blood and guts setting type thing where I was like, this guy, this looks strange. This is a fever dream.
I mean, he's looked better in AEW. He had that match with Okada that, you know, he looked really good there. And we got a glimpse of like, ooh, he did a tiger driver off the top rope. Here we go. Hey, Kenny Omega's here. Nice to see him. This is just the lights out that makes me think something's gonna happen. Like there's gonna be like some big angle to close the show. It'll probably be Ospreay's write-off for this neck injury. There's the naive part of me that's like, maybe he's working because he's you know, he's in here with Tanahashi, who would, you know, post pictures of his x-rays and have everybody work over that injured arm during the G1. So maybe he's working. I'm just crossing my arms open. But I think this is going to end up with the Death Riders winning, Will getting stretchered off, and Darby just screaming for revenge that he will probably get in Toronto.
I mean, firstly, the UK is completely owed a big Kenny singles match. Like so much. But I don't, I do not like the Death Riders, right, at all. And I think every show, you know, I'm on, I'm just like, I don't like the Death Riders. I don't like Moxley. I think he's like, my relationship with Jon Moxley, I think, is broken beyond repair due to the Death Riders. Mm. But it could change, because I thought me and MJF were done forever after him and Adam Cole, but I've actually come back around. But for some reason with Moxley, I don't think he has it to make me ever like him in any way again because of the Death Riders stuff, right? I think he will be my new Edge, you know, in like 10 oh. years. In like 10 years, I'm going to be like, kids, I lived through Jon Moxley. And you don't want to encourage him and Seth Rollins teaming up again at WrestleMania like 60 or something. Like, you don't want it, kids.
The Shield share, look out.
So I do, you know, death to the Death Riders, just like end it. But I think there would be something quite like sad, and it would be such a tragic ending for the babyfaces to lose, and Will especially in the UK to be like stretchered off, you know, go off into the sunset. That would be like really sad, but I don't put it past like Tony Khan doing that. Of course, well, there could be some sort of surprise at the end, but I don't know. Maybe it's like, it's all really tragic. And we got Tanahashi, Ospreay on stretchers, all of that. And then we have one man left alone in the ring, and that's Darby Allin. And he's in tears because all his friends are off to the hospital. And then his dad, Sting, just comes out and gives him a hug.
Oh.
And that's how we end it. And it's like, oh.
I do think that tragic ending for Ospreay, though, I think that would help, because if he's back in time, you could build up his like return to Wembley, because everybody think, you know, the Wembley show next year, everybody pretty much presumes Ospreay is like going to be the focal point of that, if he can be. Yes. So doing that, I do think, would help like the come around of, I'm going to get my revenge, I'm going to win the title at All In. But then that would require, then Mox would have to have the belt then. So maybe we burn that off a little earlier than that. Maybe that's the Owen final.
I do. If Ospreay is gone for like a really, really long length of time, like it does make me worried. You know, not saying like they obviously have a lot of people, Hangman, Swerve. But Ospreay really does inject something into all these cards and all these shows that he's going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, it's losing him is like a really tough, because he really feels like he embodies what a lot of people want the company to be.
Yeah.
And then you're losing, you're going to lose Swerve for a lot shorter period. He might only miss like, 6 weeks or something with this knee, depending on how he chooses to rehab it. But, you know, I do think they have a lot of like people underneath that can like rise up. You know, you've got Darby, you've got the ops, you can, you know, kind of not split them up, but like use them separately.
Yeah.
You know, you've you've got, maybe Eddie Kingston, we'll see how his like Eddie
coming back would really inject something into it. Like Eddie coming huge. Back.
You know, you
Eddie coming back and feuding with Mox will not make me like Mox again, but it will make me find him watchable. Like that could be his salvation, getting in there, but he would have to have no Claudio or anyone with him, like none of that, like just him and Eddie. If they told a storyline with Eddie coming back where they can do promos and everything, and I might be on board.
What if Pat came back on this show? He's been out for a little while. What if he helps them win, and then that's kind of how the heels get the win?
Man, what if the greatest wrestler of all time, Jay White, came back? That would make me very, very happy. That would make me very, very happy. I don't know how he'd fit into any of this shit, but you know, just to see him again would be great. But the at least the lights out matches are always a spectacle. And I think on Monday we can prepare ourselves for conversations about, was it too violent, and was the card too long? Like that's what we're going to be seeing debated on Twitter in the night.
So every post AEW conversation, every post pay-per-view conversation.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be a good show. Like I know a lot of people that are going that are really excited. It's not, you know, Wembley, but it's still going to be fun for everyone. There's a lot of great stuff going on. So anyone that's going to Forbidden Door, have an awesome time. I know you will. And I think that's it, Suit. Thank you so much for doing this with me and for having our first ever meeting on air. Would you like to tell everyone about what you do and where they can find you and all that great stuff?
Yeah, so I write about pro wrestling a lot. You can find my writing on voicesofwrestling.com. I also have my own blog, suitwilliams.com, where I do my own like watch projects. I did Williams Watches WrestleMania, where I watched every WrestleMania up to this year, and I did the reviews of this year's show live. It was very interesting and very fun to do. And my current project right now is called As Good As It Gets, where I am reviewing the best of 1997 pro wrestling.
So best right year. Now, the best year in wrestling.
Yeah, I am up to the first half of March. So right before WrestleMania, the next batch will have the big Bret Hart Psycho Sid steel cage match. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot. I got a big batch of All Japan coming up as well.
Wow.
I just did in the most recent batch, I did the big Final Four match with Bret, Austin, Undertaker, and Vader. So yeah, I got a lot going on there. And then you can find me on social media at Suit Williams.
Nice. And you can find me on X and Instagram at Stephanie M. Chase. You can find me on Substack, Stephanie Chase or Stephanie M. Chase, whatever, you'll find it. I wrote there last week about, you know, WWE hates women.
Hard to argue.
If you're into that kind of thing, you can read that. And I've got some other writing plan that will be up soon. But yeah, thank you guys so much. I'm going to be back next week previewing Clash in Paris. I'm pretty sure it will be Andrew Thompson with me, which is going to be really fun. So make sure you look out for the link to that. And Suit, thank you once again. I had a really great time. And thank you all for watching. And enjoy Forbidden Door. And I'll see you next time. Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.